Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello there and welcome to this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments, you can join me on a discovery tour of the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music on Pope Benedict's agenda this week. Learn about a document focusing on sacred music, written by the founder of this institute, Pope Pius X. That's with our popular Latin lover. And finally, enjoy an uplifting spiritual musical comment on the second joyful mystery of the Rosary. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. A visit to the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music provides Benedict XVI with a musical moment on Saturday, 13th of October. A pleasant appointment this for the Pope, as we know he never misses an opportunity to insist on the value of sacred music, in particular Gregorian chant. It's an institute located in a former Benedictine monastery, San Girolamo dell'Urbe, surrounded by a pleasant park and situated northwest, just up the hill from the Vatican. Anticipating the Pope's visit there, I went there myself earlier in the week, discovering a place where, as expected, the sound of music comes at you from all corners of the building. Particularly if you stand at the heart of it, the little lemon tree-graced cloister. A place already familiar to the Pope simply because he went there when he was still a cardinal, when his brother, Monsignor Georg Ratzinger, received a prestigious award there. And one clearly familiar to those in the Pope's welcoming party, who include Cardinal Zenon Grokoleski, the prefect of the Congregation for Catholic Education. Let's not forget, this institution comes under its auspices. But also the Dean of the Institute, Maestro, and Monsignor Valenti Miserax Grau, a well-known Spanish-born composer. Let's begin by listening to some of his music. Naturally, this maestro is one of the professors of composition at this academic institute. Other professors there train students to be anything from chapel master, liturgical organist, musicologist, or indeed concert performer. With that focus on sacred music Pope Benedict is so interested in. But our present Pope isn't the only Pope to have expressed interest in these fields. All of the Popes of the 20th century, if you exclude John Paul I, had their say on the matter, beginning with Pius X, who founded the Institute in 1910, Benedict XV, who gave it its first home in 1914, Pius XII, who warmly encouraged it in 1955, writing an encyclical by the title of Musicae Sacrae Disciplina. And then John XXIII, who wrote an apostolic letter, Jocunda Laudatio, to mark its 50th birthday, establishing a section of music dedicated to the missions. And then Paul VI, who founded the Consociatio Internationalis, which stepped up international standing. And in 1983, John Paul II, who gave this institute its present premises, where I met one of the professors of piano there when I visited. So your name is Maestro
Antonio Sardi de Letto. I am the Vice Dean and the Prefect of the Studies of the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music.
And you are a pianist?
I am a pianist, yes. I'm mainly pianist performer, piano teacher since 7 years now.
You've shown me into a room where there's the most extraordinary organ, no?
Organ, yes. It's an organ built by the Italian factory Mascioni. This room is the room in which we have choir conducting. It used to be the room of Domenico Bartolucci, who was the master of the Cappella Sistina. We have, well, many students here training about conducting and singing, and we have also organ lessons We have also an harpsichord for antique music. We used to have basso continuo lessons also.
But there are a lot of students from all over the world. Is what you get here, you can't get anywhere else. Is that correct?
Yes, I would say more or less 30 nationalities, which is a huge number of nations from Europe, from Italy, from Eastern Asia, from South America, North America. It looks very strange to have so many persons who have to follow a quite long period of studying together. So it's good because this relationship can go on during the time, and we have sometimes students of the 70s or also before of the 50s, very, very close to the institute because they spent in one of the most beautiful cities in the world a very important period of training, of studying.
We moved on from this room to the monastery's stark, airy chapel, dominated once again by an organ. I began to wonder about the key role this particular instrument has in sacred music.
The only instrument supposed to be in the church, except from the human voice, so is central. It's central in our institute. We had a very important master in the 30s, Raffaele Manari, who really had a very important school of organists. And so we can say really that the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music started mainly with organ, also Gregorian chant, of course. But this organ that we have in the church of the institute is a German organ, is a Kleiss organ with two keyboards, built expressly for the institute in 1985. And John Paul II went here just for the inauguration of this organ at the time, yes.
Would you say that this is the temple of Gregorian chant?
Well, we are very proud of our teachers, of our tradition. Of course, one historical site for the Gregorian chant is the Abbey of Solesmes in France. In fact, one of our two teachers, Daniel Saulnier, is a French monk, a Benedictine monk, coming just from the Solesmes Abbey in France. Yes, we try to preserve the enormous richness, heritage of the church and of the humanity, I would say.
The Pope is coming to this particular chapel. Do you know what music is going to be played?
Our speciality is Gregorian chant. We have some polyphony and we'll have some organ piece, but everything will be quite short because we have two music, but also to have the time to listen to what the Pope will say about our institute, about the sacred music.
Mm. He likes speaking about sacred music. He encourages it,
yeah,
a lot.
Yes, but he did this as cardinal. There are many writings about sacred music, and I think it's a moment in which it's important maybe to underline some traditions are very close to the liturgy. The Gregorian chant, for example, is so linked with the spirituality of a Mass, for example. It's beautiful music. Maybe many persons don't know this, but I think it's very important to go on and hoping that there will be a sort of revival.
But it's all music that comes from the past, though, doesn't it? Or are there new compositions?
It's mostly from the past, but we are here in the institute. Of course, we have a branch of composition in which there is also new music.
Like that of your dean?
New sacred music. What is sacred? That's the big question. How can we try to guess and to say that some music is sacred music? Well, it's difficult because also what popes wrote in the past, in the last century, in the 20th century, is very difficult because there are no objective criteria to say this. Of course, having a cradle in which you study the past, I think is anyway the first step to do this. You cannot forget what is the past, the Gregorian, but also the ancient polyphony. And from this, you can have a modern language, but also linked with tradition, is just as the language.
There's language for sacred music is Latin.
The language for sacred music is Latin, of course.
Your students, though, come from different parts of the world. You told me that there are some Koreans here, no? Do they know Latin?
Well, some of them, yes, but we have also Latin teachers, and it's a subject of our courses in the Institute, the Latin, of course.
So activities here are multifaceted because you have teaching, you put music into practice as well, though.
Yes.
So there's like teaching, the history of music, and practice. Would you say that
yes.
could define it?
Yes, we have the two branches that overlapped themselves, so the practice and the theory, yes. Both are important, of course. I would say that the practice maybe is the most interesting occasion because we can have teachers performing, teachers conducting, teachers composing and explaining it to the pupils, to the students, the good direction, the good aim, the good purpose to follow. We have also some publications, writings of musicological matter.
But perhaps the Institute's most prized possession is the 15th century auditorium, the Sala Accademica, where another more prestigious Moscione organ from the 1930s takes pride of place.
Very important, with five keyboards, is a very well-known organ all over the world. And it has been restored, and within a few months, the hall will be open again for concerts. And I think it will be a joyful moment for everybody.
Until the 1980s, the site of the Institute, and today still its legal site, this Sala Accademica is attached to the Church of St. Augustine in the heart of Rome, and importantly has been the venue for many a concert down the centuries. Pondering over these performances, I dreamingly wondered what music my pianist, the maestro Antonio Sardi de Letta, is particularly fond of and was bold enough to inquire. What's your favourite music? Don't tell me it's sacred music.
Well, except the sacred music. You're speaking generally about
just
music.
Just generally.
Well, as pianist, of course, I like Chopin so much. I think he's one of the best composers for the piano, and also Liszt, Franz Liszt.
Franz Liszt, a composer who seems to happily grace the maestro's life. Suffice to think he'll soon be off to Hungary's capital, Budapest, to perform in what was once Liszt's very own house. Liszt, too, he added quietly, once performed in the Sala Accademica of the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music. My thanks there go to the Vice Dean of the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music, Maestro Antonio Sardi de Letta, a pianist whose performance of Liszt's Sonata in B minor we've just been listening to. And now moving on in the broadcast, on a totally different note, it's time for our weekly rendezvous with our popular Latin lover. He's Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, as you all know. This week I quiz him about a papal document written by the founder of the Pontifical Institute we've just been talking about. Pius X. 1903. Beginning of the 20th century.
That's when he was elected.
Mm-hmm. He wrote, at the beginning of his pontificate, he wrote an instruction on sacred music. On the feast day of St. Cecilia, November 22nd, 1903. I'd like to, for respect towards your expertise in Latin, I'd like to read from from a section in the liturgical text which says, "The language proper to the Roman Church is Latin. Hence it is forbidden to sing anything whatever in the vernacular in solemn liturgical functions." Mm. And he specifies much more, to sing in the vernacular or common parts of the Mass.
I didn't know that.
He also specifies what the least suitable music is for liturgical events. In his view, for accompanying functions of public worship, the least suitable is the theatrical style, which was in the greatest vogue in Italy in the 19th century, which he describes as diametrically opposite to Gregorian chant. Now, you know who I'm going to speak about now, don't you?
No.
Someone you like a lot. Venantius
Fortunatus.
Right?
We were reading him in the office this morning.
Okay, what did he say? What were you reading about?
Well, reading his hymns there, which are in the breviary all over the place.
Well.
That people don't know about. I'm surprised that he spoke that strongly. Pius X about liturgical hymns in Latin.
He specifies Pius X. He says that sacred music should possess in the highest degree the qualities proper to the liturgy, and in particular sanctity and goodness of form, which will spontaneously produce the final quality of universality.
Good.
How does one say sanctity and goodness of form in Latin?
Sanctitatem formaeque bonitatem. No, they wouldn't say bonitatem, integritatem.
And it must...
Sanctitatem formaeque integritatem.
Which gives it a final quality of universality. That's interesting, isn't it?
Quae tribuit ultimam universalitatis indolem.
Then he says it must be holy. We know what that is in Latin.
Whatever that means.
Well, he specifies... and must therefore exclude all profanity, not only in itself, but in the manner in which it is presented by those who execute it.
Like people dancing with guitars at the altar.
How does one say people dancing with guitars at the altar?
No!
He didn't know. There weren't people dancing with guitars.
No, cum citeris saltantes ad aram. Cum citeris saltantes ad aram. People dancing with guitars at the altar.
It must be true art, for otherwise it will be impossible for it to exercise on the minds of those who listen to it that efficacy which the Church aims at obtaining in admitting into her liturgy the art of musical sounds. How do I say the art of musical sounds?
Well, you want to say sonorum musicorum artem. You can do that easily. I better look into this thing. I have to look into
Pius,
this.
I can give it to you.
No, I know where I can find it at the beginning of his pontificate.
The different kinds of sacred music, it says that these qualities are to be found in the highest degree in Gregorian chant, as we said, no? Consequently, the chant proper to the Roman Church, the only chant she has inherited from the ancient fathers, which she has jealously guarded for centuries in her liturgical... Well, it says codices, but I don't know how you say that in English. Codices?
Codices. Like manuscripts.
Yeah.
So how
does one say the Gregorian chant, the only chant inherited from the ancient fathers, jealously guarded for centuries?
Cantus Gregorianus. A patribus hereditate acceptus. Jealously. That's a hard word to say.
Why do you think I picked it?
Custoditus. Almost avide. Avidissime custoditus. Guarded as what?
For centuries.
A tot secola. I have to look into this.
You know the other guy he likes is Pierluigi da Palestrina. Classic polyphony. How does one say that in Latin?
Polyphonia classica, what are you going to say?
Of the Roman school. The supreme model of all sacred music.
He would talk that way today. You could never get away with that today.
Okay, well... He would
just laugh you out of existence.
Venantius Fortunatus, the supreme model of all sacred music.
He would talk that way today. You could never get away with that today.
Okay, well,
he would just laugh you out of existence.
Venantius Fortunatus, he was a saint, and he was born about 530. He was Italian.
Well, actually, French, really. What might have been up there in southern France, if I'm not mistaken.
In Poitiers, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He received a relic of the Two Cross, and he has a famous hymn, no? Does he have a famous hymn?
Vexilla Regis Pro Deus, or something. Or Pange Linguam, depends.
Vexilla Regis Pro Deus.
Mm-hmm.
Hymnus in Honore Sancte Crucis.
Which is still used today in the liturgy for Good Friday. It's still used. Most people don't know where it comes from.
Okay, well, what verse would you like to translate for us?
Vexilla Regis Pro Deus. Fulgit crucis mysterium. The flags of the king come out. The mystery of the cross is shining. Quo carne carnis conditor, suspensus est patibulo. By which mystery the creator of the flesh, in the flesh, was hung up on a cross. That's what's there.
Do they still sing all the verses or just some of them?
No, it depends. No, not all the verses. Fundis aroma cortis, you know, I haven't seen that. I would think almost down to the end is fundis aroma cortis. The last two maybe not, but I see the rest is there. We're still using this.
A big thank you there to our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, for sharing with us once again his scholarly expertise. Father Foster is currently working at the Vatican's Secretariat of State as the Pope's own Latinist. And now to follow more musical notes as we end the broadcast, focusing once again this month of October on the Rosary, in particular on the second joyful mystery. So stay tuned as our music historian shares with us his scholarly expertise. If you happen to be a regular listener, you're bound to be familiar with his voice. So recognize it right away. He's Monsignor Philip Whitmore.
On hearing the news the angel brought her, Mary went as quickly as she could to visit her cousin Elizabeth. Not only was the young virgin to give birth to a child, but so was her older cousin, who had been barren for years. With God, nothing is impossible. When Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting, straight away she cried out, "Of all women, you are the most blessed, and blessed is the fruit of your womb." Reply, Mary poured out her feelings of joy and exultation in that glorious canticle, the Magnificat, which the Church uses in the office of evening prayer every day. The setting of the Magnificat comes from the famous Vespers of Our Lady, written by Claudio Monteverdi in the year 1610. I always think this music must be one of the finest job applications in history. In 1610, Monteverdi was getting itchy feet. He'd been working for the Duke of Mantua for about 20 years, and he was wanting to spread his wings a little further. There were jobs coming up in Rome, at St. Peter's, and in Venice at St. Mark's. So in 1610 he published two compositions in very different styles. There was a mass setting in the old contrapuntal style that he knew would go down well in Rome, and there was this wonderful Baroque Vespers in the Venetian style, using instruments and virtuoso solo parts and bright colours. 3 years later, he got the job in Venice and stayed there for the rest of his life. All through Monteverdi's setting of the Magnificat, you can hear the plain song melody, like a great pillar supporting an elaborate Baroque structure. That was typical of the way Catholic composers wrote liturgical music at this time. Monteverdi would have thought of his Magnificat as a vast variation on that simple plain song melody. So many wonderful Magnificat settings to choose from, we could even devote a whole series of programmes just to them. But there's one other I'd like to play for you, and that's the Festal Magnificat by Johann Sebastian Bach, written in Leipzig in the 1720s. Like Monteverdi's setting, it has a particularly joyful tone with trumpets and drums, and this is because it was originally written to be sung at Christmas. Mary just had to tell someone the wonderful news she'd received. She told her cousin, and in the words of the Magnificat, she tells us. The Almighty looked upon her in her lowliness and did great things for her. History has proved Mary right. From that day, all generations have called her blessed, the Holy Virgin who was found worthy to become the mother of our Lord and Saviour, Jesus Christ.
Heartfelt thanks there to Monsignor Philip Whitmore for bringing us this musical comment on the second joyful mystery of the Rosary. Monsignor Whitmore is a music historian currently working at the Vatican's Secretariat of State. Well, that brings us up to time. I do hope to have pleasantly entertained you today with this broadcast, which focused entirely on sacred music. Thanks so much for listening, and bye for now. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.